This is The Way Phase 4, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. Today's episode wraps up a discussion we started in September on the Marvel series, What If? All episodes of Season 1 are now available to stream on Disney Plus, if you have a subscription, of course. The show What If is a selection of stories told in alternate universes about Marvel heroes that happen outside the canon of the MCU, or what the Marvel show Loki ended up calling the sacred timeline. So think animated and approved fan fiction. It's meant to entertain you by enticing you down hypothetical rabbit holes. You won't have to have watched this show to understand Phase 4 of the Marvel Universe, but we're watching them so we can let you know if it's worth your time.
Time. It's a prism of endless possibility.
It's October, and there's still time to enter our giveaway. We're going to wait to see if we have enough entries to validate the giveaway, and if we don't, we're going to roll over the entries into a November giveaway, which would then award both our selected items to one valid entry. You'll have to wait until our Black Widow movie podcast for more information about it. That should come out later this month. The giveaway is meant to increase participation in our podcast by you, our listeners. Yes, I know, you're participating by listening. But just because I can't find friends near me who like discussing the shows doesn't mean I'm alone. I believe it's more fun to find others that think about shows more deeply and discuss the entertainment we consume. And we can see if there isn't something that we can learn from the stories. That's why I will continue to ask you to send in your thoughts through social media or email. This is The Way Phase 4 at gmail.com. At The Way Phase 4 on Twitter and Facebook.com/The Way Phase 4. And if I can get an Instagram page up, we'll try to get that too. Now, if we get feedback, I'm going to share it.
What? What'd you say?
If you listened to our first two podcasts on What If, you may have an impression that we don't enjoy the show. That's not the whole story. The animation is excellent and makes watching enjoyable. Or at least as enjoyable as possible. I feel, however, that the writing and voice acting at times can be tough to stay connected to the story. In some places, it's almost as if they needed to do some more takes or something because the line read feels off, and maybe it's just the writing. Sometimes I'd be coasting along, watching the show, not realizing I'm getting engrossed by the story. Then something pulls me out, and you have that moment where you're thinking about why suddenly it feels like you're watching a bad cartoon instead of just following the story. There's something about the way I've seen the Marvel Universe since Iron Man that makes even the impossible feel real. The suspension of disbelief is much harder when the only constraint is, can we draw it? And not, how would this look if it was really happening? For some people, that's part of what they like about comics and this kind of animation. For me, this is where dialogue starts to feel out of place, because the reader of that dialogue simply reads and records it, and the animators then match it to the action. There's something about having to read that line and act at the same time that lets you know right away if it's out of place or doesn't feel right. And I'm not taking away anything from the actors, but not all of them do voice work, and so sometimes it just doesn't feel right.
You lost your home, and now you save everyone else's. That's the name of this tune, huh?
In What If, they're relying on a world and characters that we've already experienced as viewers to tell a new story. But they immediately change the familiar to suit their needs. Then they expect everyone to have the same experience and ride. I don't know how else you can tell these stories. But to me, that posits the question, then, why tell them if you can't do it right? So that's one problem for me with the series. Another, look, it's the Disney culture and social justice propaganda. Disney just cannot seem to help but portray their opinions as not just the right ones, but any other point of view is evil. I admit, when you have comic book superheroes, part of the entire genre is the fight against good and evil. But another thing I think Marvel has done as a masterstroke of story planning is making the enemies at some point in their arc seem almost reasonable. In this show, Ultron is all bad, but when you juxtapose it with Guardians of the Multiverse are all good, then you're kind of rubber stamping anything that they do, you know, as the brand of social politics that you want to represent. I don't think that's by accident either.
That's how things played out in one universe.
There's a good article we tweeted out by Michael Ordonia, I think of the Los Angeles Times. It brings up a lot of the problems I had with the various episodes, like Christine's death and the Doctor Strange episode being called an absolute point when, in the canon timeline, she doesn't even go on the ride. And even if that's an absolute point in that universe, it doesn't make sense that he wouldn't be able to find any series of events that keeps her safe in his. He brings up Tony Stark dying in almost all the episodes when it's odd to posit that in these separate universes, the Watcher is basically showing us the stories that kill a kid and fan favorite character, when it only serves to cheapen the huge character moment he sacrificed himself at the end of Endgame for. He brings up Ultron's dominance and the lessening of the stakes, when this is the gun to the knife fight kind of thing, since any villain coming after him seems weaker. I mean, he's basically destroying entire universes in the multiverse, and any death seems cheaper because you can just get another version of the character from somewhere else, you know? Any threat to any universe no longer has the Watcher able to hide behind an oath preventing interference. There's also a lot of time problems, like he's picking people out of different points in time, and only that one time, and in the manner in which that one time is told, don't bear out the logic that they set for themselves. You know, they picked how to tell the story, they picked how the rules work, and they still can't get them, you know, straight. We're not even talking logic from someone else, you know, it's, or laws of physics, or nature. It's animated. They can literally do anything. So the lines that they draw are arbitrary, but where the live-action properties make those feel immutable, this show hinges on the fact that we're supposed to be impressed that a cosmic being doesn't observe the rules that he himself says are there. You got to check out Michael's article. It's linked to in one of our Twitter posts on October 8th, 2021.
Your single choice can branch out into infinite realities.
Believe it or not, I was still mostly entertained by this last episode of the series. All series long, there had been some reviewers and critics online making odd comments in their articles and videos where they would say things like, I don't know, it just feels like this show is going to tie together, but we're not sure. It just feels like it's going to in the end. I think it's clear that those people who did that were just pretending. I've been watching TV a long time. These episodes only had the one thing tying them together. That's the Watcher as a narrative device. Now, unless you knew the titles of the episodes and synopsis for each one before the season, there's no way you could support such claims with evidence from those episodes. The way they tie in the zombies in the final episode, in fact, proves it beyond a shadow of a doubt to me. Because that episode is only tangentially tied in, and then it's weak to the point of ridiculousness. We don't look at Reddit for spoilers now. I don't do that. We don't have insider knowledge or look for leaks. We scour the shows themselves, interpret, so if the seeds aren't there, nothing is germinating in our minds. We do see the news articles that pop up, you know, on major news sites. Now, if it was something that we missed, I'd be happy to admit it, but it's just not there. I mean, tell me if it is, but it's just not there except for one episode really late in the season. And even then, I mean, we have 7.99 episodes where there's no evidence at all. 6.999 episodes where there's no evidence at all, right? Because then there's that WTF moment at the end of the Thor episode, and then two episodes that should have probably been episodes 1 and 9 instead of 8 and 9. So we get, what if Thor was raised as an only child without the influence of Loki? What if Ultron didn't just win but collected the Infinity Stones? And what if the Watcher lied at the beginning and end of every other episode, saying he never intervenes if he supposedly sees everything, even if he's admitting he doesn't see everything because he didn't see this? The most important thing, it undercuts his entire arc, but, you know, what if the Watcher lied? And that's not the title of the episode. That's how I'm describing it. The narrator of the show is that character. It's very much so in the last two episodes of the series. He is a character. His name is Uatu, and he's a grim voyeur of not just one universe, but all realities. He's not here to interfere. Spoiler alert, unless he wants to. He's telling us the tales of what he sees and does as the Watcher.
I am your guide through these vast new realities. Follow me. And ponder the question, what if?
What if You've looked all over the multiverse for that next level holiday gift, and this is the year you want to make history. What if you're tired of just looking fine in your finery? What if you like Luke, but you love Loki? What if you head right now to cufflinks.com? Visit that site and you'll find a small, family-run business with over 3,000 accessories available from the biggest brands and fandoms. Cufflinks, yes, they are in the name, but you can find ties, tie bars, lapel pins, shirt studs, socks, and this fall, even bracelets. You have to check out their Marvel brand page. Iron Man, Captain America, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Black Panther, Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, Loki, Avengers, Thor, Spider-Man, X-Men. You can choose bright, colorful offerings or wear something so subtle it will take a sharp eye for the person you want to impress to realize they're in the presence of the world's greatest hero accessories. You don't have to have a need for cufflinks to appreciate the quality, and you might just find yourself considering a bow tie or deciding between gift sets when you see those Thanos Infinity Gauntlets or Captain America shields. There's more than Marvel. DC, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, Star Trek, sports leagues like MLB, NFL, NHL, collegiate offerings, and of course, Star Wars. In fact, just like our Star Wars-themed podcast, we can offer you the same site-wide discount code for 15% off your purchase when you enter THEWAY15 in the coupon code box at checkout. And look, some shows might not even tell you this, but you can save even more if you spend more than $175 this month and use their 20% off code of Fresh Looks. So, what if you want to look marvelous while wearing Marvel? Well, cufflinks.com has you covered, no matter which universe you call home. Check out cufflinks.com today. Okay, so going back, episode 7 wonders for us if Odin's rescue or kidnapping of Loki was wise, or if the god of mischief taught Thor a thing or two about being a hero just by being his brother. What if Thor were an only child, streamed first on September 22nd, 2021, written by A.C. Bradley. After defeating the Frost Giants in battle, Odin discovers the abandoned infant Loki and returns him to his father, Laufey. Years later, Odin's son, Thor, has become a boisterous, party-loving prince. While Odin sleeps and Frigga is away, Thor travels to Earth to host a gigantic party, inviting aliens from all over the galaxy, and his arrival attracts the attention of Jane Foster and Darcy Lewis, who end up joining the party. Thor and Foster grow close, so there wasn't just a big thing that happened in the Thor movie that brought them together. They just naturally, I guess, are supposed to grow close.
You are a genius, aren't you?
Well, I don't know about genius, but...
And your eyes. Do all geniuses have such deep, dark eyes?
Acting S.H.I.E.L.D. director Maria Hill, wishing to end the destruction caused by Thor's antics, summons Carol Danvers to Earth with the pager, you know, that was held by Nick Fury. Danvers confronts Thor, but is ultimately defeated. Lewis suggests Danvers fight Thor in less populated areas where she can safely use her full power. To avoid this, Foster contacts Frigga with Heimdall's help. Hill readies a nuclear strike when Danvers and Thor are battling. Frigga interrupts, announces her imminent arrival, frightened Thor and the alien partygoers clean up the mess. Frigga arrives to see Thor studying. Foster prompts Thor to ask her out on a date, and then suddenly an army of drones led by Ultron envisions body, and it's wielding all 6 Infinity Stones, appears.
Wait, what?
Huh? Oh, dear. Perhaps I spoke too soon.
The word that first came to mind when trying to describe the episode was, frankly, boring. The most interesting part of the entire episode to me was the very end, which probably should have been the focus of its own episode, and that was that .999 part I was talking about earlier in the episode. The Vision shows up, and that's interesting. It's most likely housing Ultron. We don't hear him speak. Now, since the Avengers never stopped him with Thor's help, and Thor wasn't there to jumpstart a Jarvis-led Vision, it's reasonable to say in this universe, Vision, you know, could have become powerful. Danvers holding back her powers as Captain Marvel this is an example of Disney just believing it's impossible to show a single male character being more powerful than another non-male character. Why can't Thor just be better, more powerful, or stronger? Did he not have to hold back too? Are we saying then that Thor should have to die? Why can't Danvers die? Am I supposed to suspect that it's a story choice and not a political one? She's a mortal drawing power from a stone that she doesn't actually have anymore, whereas Thor is styled after a mortal god and has been for ages. But either Danvers can't die, or she can, but just not by Thor's hand. Even beyond that, it's just a boring episode. It might be the least important and my least favorite, despite how much I love Frigga as a character in the MCU and how important she was to both Thor and Loki. Somehow, they even managed to make her just look like a nag, because there's not a lot of work done inside this particular episode to make her seem motherly. They rely on your personal previous knowledge of her character in the MCU. For me, this is where I realized all the theorizing about the episodes tying together was actually foreknowledge by those people, because the reveal at the end comes out of left field. Even with the reveal, the proof those YouTubers and podcasters were pointing to was that the watcher was surprised. But they were talking about this episode before this happened and talking about how, like, oh, we're going to see in episode 7 that these things start to tie together. But if you cut off that last scene, there is absolutely nothing that could tip you off. So they had to have known about this scene. Now, you could have read the Watcher being surprised in many ways. Indeed, the next episode does not start with the Watcher intervening. In fact, it doesn't see him realize anything's different until midway through the next episode. So how does he go, what? And then not immediately start investigating how that wouldn't be possible. Again, it's poor writing, poor decisions on story. It might have been doomed at concept, but since it's easier to write a comic book and then toss that to the side, you know, than it would be to make this comic universe dovetail with the already miraculously consistent yet imperfect MCU phases 1-3, I am just going to say it is just poor writing, poor decisions. It's just a poorly done show.
This particular story, this one breaks my heart.
Next episode, episode 8, What If Ultron Won, written by Matthew Chauncey and streaming first on September 29th, 2021. After the last week's reveal, there was speculation that there would be a crossover. And the one thing I liked about this episode, and yes, we're talking about one, was that I went from thinking there was a connection to not, and then getting the reveal at the end definitely tricked me, but that's more because of the story structure, not really at all because of the story content. I think this would have been a better first episode. I really do. I think this episode should have been the first one that we saw instead of the Captain Carter one. In this version of the multiverse, Ultron succeeds in having his consciousness uploaded to the Vision body that the Avengers managed to thwart in Age of Ultron. In that version, Tony Stark uploaded his Jarvis program and Thor started his heart with his lightning power. Here, Vision never exists. It's Ultron's voice and consciousness in that body, being the one melded with the vibranium and organic tissue, you know, a synthesoid terror. The beginning of the episode shows Hawkeye and Black Widow as two of the last survivors of a Holocaust. So the two humans with just some, you know, really super skill are the ones that are the last survivors, not the superheroes themselves. Ultron is sending sentries out to kill resistance to his peace in our time, and somehow Natasha and Clint have been able to stay alive, and we learn that Hawkeye is missing an arm, Winter Soldier style, and I'm left to wonder, since these events happened before Winter Soldier, if there was ever a Bucky release. As we'll see later in the episode, there certainly was never a fight from Zemo, where he assassinated the frozen super soldiers in Siberia, because we see them, and those capsules are still, you know, pristine. Before the last of the Avengers heads to Moscow to search for something, anything that will help them stop Ultron, Uatu updates us on what happened to the world in this version of the multiverse. The Avengers never stole the cradle containing the lifeless body that would become Vision. Instead, Ultron initiated global thermonuclear annihilation and succeeded. We even get to see the fallen bodies of Captain America, Thor, and the Hulk, with Tony Stark being the last to fall in that fight. The Avengers in this universe never saw the power of the Infinity Stones unleashed in full. It's at the end of the Watcher's telling of the story, however, we see Thanos emerge from a portal alone, surprised, I guess, to find Ultron in a barren landscape. I suppose we have to accept that Thanos was simply unprepared. But he would have been prepared when stepping through a portal, right? I mean, maybe there could have been a little bit more dialogue than just...
Fascinating.
But that's what we got. And we're supposed to believe that the powerful four-stone Thanos can rewrite reality, but didn't create a doppelganger like he did for the Guardians of the Galaxy to show up. He just walked right into a buzzsaw. And I might add, Vision certainly would have cut him in half in Infinity War if he had, you know, the power to do that. So I feel like that's a plot hole as well. I feel like this simply is the writers lacking the ability to think of all the ways the universe might have stopped him first, because this is the one version where no one apparently does. That's why I find it hard to believe the Watcher Uatu doesn't see everything coming.
I have seen everything that has ever happened, ever will happen, ever could happen, and yet, what the hell is this?
That's why this episode feels like a bad Saturday morning cartoon cliffhanger. We're shown his conquests across different worlds until finally, at the last moment, Captain Marvel shows up. I don't know why Marvel makes her the worst, but she just is. She shows up at the very last moment when she's when she's all alone and the only chance for help. She's even more disaffected than Dr. Manhattan. And I don't care how big the universe is. As soon as we're got out of Earth being annihilated, was there something bigger going on somewhere else that she was so busy? Did she not get Fury's text in the final moments of nuclear war? Ultron and his drone army destroy the entire known universe again. The TVA asleep at the wheel in this version as well. Earth wasn't blown up though, so Clint and Natasha are left to scour box by box the archives of the KGB somehow. Hawkeye even references the vastness of the place to the Raiders of the Lost Ark ending. There's another sticking point for me with the Watcher. He's on the verge of helping them find the Arnim Zola file. But he doesn't need to break his vow here, I suppose, which makes the end of the episode only that much more head-scratching. Now he needs to. He couldn't hear. He just really couldn't. And he can't see that he's going to later. He vowed not to interfere, saying he saw every possibility, except for this one, I guess.
There is still hope for this universe. One last hope.
It leaves me wondering, how is that even possible? How can you see every possibility except for one? Since that's not every possibility. If he didn't see this one, did he not think that maybe there was an indication to take things more seriously earlier on? If he started seeing things that he didn't see? Not just that, what was the difference between making a file fall off a shelf, unless they wanted to avoid the interstellar comparison, or if he speaks to them directly, if Ultron was already communicating to him, violating some of that multiverse law? Clint and Natasha find the analog tape-to-tape copy routed through a 70s or 80s Tandy monitor, which somehow has the right USB or flash drive adapter for one of Clint's arrows, and they download the consciousness of Arnim Zola. Rather than find a sentry unsuspecting, they call a bomb threat in, basically, and Ultron sends a couple of drones to investigate, right? Now, I know it was more than a couple, but I'm wondering how many other human holdouts there are that are a threat. And why? Even with the line about the archives being off-grid, Ultron didn't just show up himself, know about Hydra, seek to dismantle or destroy any possible threats to himself long before he left Earth. It just doesn't make sense. In the drone attack, Zola is uploaded to one of the drones. Barton sacrifices himself to allow Romanoff and Zola escape, but the upload to the hive mind fails because, sorry, Princess is in another castle. Ultron's consciousness is outside the universe. Zola and Natasha are fighting to stop him in this universe. He broke through the barrier of the multiverse, the crystalline one we've seen in a different episode. Ultron attacks Uatu, and they battle through not just one multiverse, but several, and Ultron's power seems too much for the Watcher. Uatu flees, and we see him break Stephen Strange out of that crystalline prison I just mentioned, the one from episode 4 where Dr. Strange went evil over losing Christine. If Strange somehow won, he's going to have all the Infinity Stones, right? And I guess he would be able to bring back Christine, snap style, I suppose, but for that, we'd have to wait until next week and the finale of season 1.
If a hunger like that were to be unleashed upon the multiverse, even I cannot imagine the horrors that might follow.
I thought this idea was interesting, and the execution just terribly sloppy. I don't know what more I could say about the episode, except it does appear now that these universes, by virtue of being part of the multiverse, are tied together. The kicker, or final moments of episode 7, certainly appeared to be a hint of the direction things are going, except if you really think about it, there's no hope. If Ultron can not just travel between universes, but in time, so he can meet Thor before he meets Avengers, there should be no hope. No, none, ever. Even if you gathered all, and I mean all, the surviving heroes of all the multiverses, you'd have to also allow for Ultron to infect every single multiverse with himself, instantly taking control. And whether or not the Infinity Stones work in multiple universes, the forces on Earth would never be a match for him. Never. He'd be available since the first computer, right? Since he could travel to the time when he was created and effectively make that happen ad infinitum, he could do that as well. I get there's a suspension of disbelief that you have to muster, but let's be thankful the MCU didn't take such a grand approach to their movies. Because let's be honest, the opening of the multiverse like this makes the stakes way too high, and the conveniences that you have to accept become almost impossible when stacked against the odds of infinity. Even if you stop him in two worlds, if he gets to three, those civilizations are dead, and Ultron's growth then is exponential. Not his defeats, just his growth. I think there's a very strong case to be made that this should have been that pilot episode. This should have kicked things off, and then we could see snippets of what is going to come later in the finale, almost like building the team. Now, obviously, you'd have to have made some rewrites, but you could still have had Doctor Strange cameo, and actually it would have made sense then to put his episode second. I think the problem then becomes you have a different show. My argument is, though, and here comes, I think it could have been done better, and the people who made the decisions here just made poor ones. The animation remains terrific, and the story choices remain horrific.
Who said that?
And that leaves us with episode 9, What If the Watcher Broke His Oath? Writer, the showrunner A.C. Bradley, debuting Disney Plus on October 6th, 2021. The finale starts off with a variation of the ship infiltration that starts Captain America Winter Soldier. This time it's Captain Carter, not Captain America, getting the rundown from Black Widow. And this time it's Peggy jumping without a parachute. This time it's Captain Britain facing off against French mercenary Batroc. She blocks or evade every single kick and punch from Batroc. Every single one. Now, I get it. Maybe Disney and Marvel chicken out at the prospect of animating a grown man punching or kicking a woman, but I had to go back and watch to make sure, and at the beginning of this fight with Batroc, Steve Rogers does get punched in the face and kicked in the chest without blocking. After that, he blocks and evades, and please, I know, later she gets punched when she's replaced in her timeline, but if you count her getting punched at the moment she returns from an alternate dimension, I don't know what to tell you, except you're just wrong. That does not count. She doesn't get punched or kicked at all. The Watcher then goes on a recruiting spree. We see him intervene and pull out of time and dimension Star-Lord T'Challa, as he saved Peter Quill from Ego. The next recruit confused me. It's Gamora, from a timeline where she defeated or killed Thanos. Tony Stark seems to have fought in Sakaar, because he's got paint all over his Iron Man Buster uniform or outfit, whatever you call it, his suit. In Nidavellir, the Starforge that made Mjolnir and Stormbreaker, Eitri didn't lose his hands to Thor, so now he can melt down the Thanos gauntlet with his real hands. Remember, the giant lost those in our canon sacred timeline, as we saw in Avengers Endgame. I googled this to see if it was a comic issue or something. Apparently, there's either actually an unseen episode or one that was cut before production where we see Gamora fighting in Sakaar and apparently she defeats Thanos. That also might be why in that alternate T'Challa Star-Lord episode, we never got a glimpse of Gamora. We got a glimpse of Nebula, but not Gamora. According to a couple sources, this lost episode is going to show up in season 2. At that point, though, if you do that, you only lead more credence to the fact that these shows really don't connect. They don't connect. That's kind of proof. If you're going to use that in the next season, they don't really connect. You're just making it up. If you could show the resolution to that episode with her killing her adoptive father, and then show the Watcher taking her for the conclusion of season 1, then show us other episodes which also don't tie into the season 1 finale, but then they show up maybe in the season 2 finale, which will then not include Gamora, right? Because she was in the season 1 finale. It's just a total mess, and it makes no sense, and it makes me angry just thinking about it. The Watcher then travels to the Killmonger universe. Remember, he's already seen Stephen Strange at the end of Episode 8. He recruits Killmonger, who took over Wakanda, and then heads to Party Thor timeline, takes Party Thor from Vegas. The Watcher explains the situation to them in a pocket universe made to look like a World War II era pub. And we may have already seen that in the Captain Carter episode, I think. There's some callback Easter egg humor in the pub as they're preparing to draw Ultron into a universe without intelligent life. And then there's a scene where Killmonger makes eyes at the Ultron drone head that's going to have a payoff. The Watcher gives the band of misfits a name. Not Multivengers or Avengers of the Multiverse, but Guardians of the Multiverse. Apparently, all the worlds Ultron has destroyed will stay destroyed for eternity. But the ones he has yet to reach are still able to be saved if there are infinity universes. I would have to imagine there's plenty of time to save an infinite amount, but we've only got like 5 or 6 guys doing the saving. We already know there's a ticking clock here. Apparently this version of Ultron's collected Infinity Stones will be destroyed by a piece of Gamora and Tony's invention, the Infinity Crusher, I think it's called. They travel to a destroyed universe. Dr. Strange sets up some protective spells, has a conversation that actually got me a little hopeful, and then it does not pay off, where Peggy says she'd like to see Steve Rogers from Strange's universe that got the serum, you know, her equal, basically, and not the skinny geek that she says she loved for what's inside. We already know if both of them are Steve, though, who's she going to pick? I mean, that's just reality. It's a sad reality of life that you know she would end up gravitating to the hunkier, equal version of Steve. They're the same guy, it's just one of them's in shape. I mean, you know. It'd be one thing if she lived her life with him first. Then she might pick the one that she lived her life with, but she didn't get to do that. They didn't even go on their first date. Thor draws Ultron's attention during a toast to their final battle. It begins with Ultron crumbling the mountain they're on using the stones, and as unbelievable and impossible as this would be to film in live action, this battle really is fun to watch. We see the group fighting with Ultron. He counters just about everything thrown at him, but then we find out that part of the plan was just to have T'Challa pickpocket the Soul Stone, which he did pretty early in the fight. Ultron doesn't seem worried. But when he goes to create some of his own toys, as he calls it, he realizes he's missing the Soul Stone. He's angry. Strange opens up a couple portals, one's for him and the Guardians of the Multiverse to escape this universe. The other is one he opens above Ultron that drops zombies from the Zombieverse.
That'll keep him busy.
Oh, zombies! Great idea! Love them!
It's not them. It's what came with the zombies.
A mountain of zombies pours out onto Ultron. So being a synthezoid, he might have been able to be partially infected, I guess, by the zombie virus. That kind of ties into what eventually happens at the end. But we do have to remember the zombie episode and what they avoided. They avoided the power of the Soul Stone in that one. Ultron disposes of them very easily. He already took down a mountain, so a mountain of zombies is not going to be much different. As bad as it is, there's actually a funny scene of zombie Wanda unleashing power on Ultron, but then kind of doing a puppy dog confused head turn when it has no effect. He obliterates the planet they were on. The team has successfully escaped early, and going through the portal leads them to Ultron's home universe. How do I know? They're because they're joined by Natasha Romanoff from that universe from Episode 8. She steals the Soul Stone from the team. She rides in on a motorcycle. Peggy, seeing an opportunity to make friends with her gal pal from another universe, appeals to the Black Widow on a personal level, but I can't believe, for all the empowerment of the Disney champions, they would simply resort to gal pals here. That's not really much of a conflict to begin with. Natasha says she's the only one left. But here she has living, breathing humans in front of her, and she's so distrustful that she steals something from them before she even introduces herself, draws a pistol against a female version of Captain America and others. Black Widow would have watched from a distance first to see what was going on before just rushing in against actual human beings. What's even more head-scratching is how quickly then she goes from riding in, stealing a stone she has no idea about, never mind being right where they portal in from the other universe, and then she completely trusts Peggy and her unspoken plan after just a couple of notes about her being friends, you know. Yeah. All of that works somehow. You're just supposed to let it go and move on. Ultron gets shot in the eye by Romanoff, summoning the power of Clint, I guess, from a ridiculous distance. After being de-helmeted, I guess, by Carter, Zola infects Ultron and the day is saved, right? No, Zola, of course, now has all the stones, except Killmonger does his heel turn thing and takes them with Tony Stark nanotech. I guess it's Killmonger nanotech. It further cheapens the genius of Iron Man's designs. And now Killmonger has the stones and Ultron's armor. Zola takes a form from the comics, as I understand it, with his belly showing his digitized green face. But he fights for the stones. Killmonger seemingly was saying, hey, now we have the power to set things right. But you know that that wasn't going to go without him taking a little extra for himself. While they struggle for them against each other, Killmonger and Zola, Doctor Strange creates a pocket dimension. But, okay, where was this? And why wouldn't it immediately fail once one of them won? If you say, well, time's frozen for them again, if that were possible to create a time-frozen pocket universe, why not do that immediately against Ultron Prime? Except we saw him going from universe to universe with the stones. It just doesn't make sense. It's sloppy, it's bad. Furthermore, why is Doctor Strange the only one who has to watch it? There's literally a character named The Watcher. Doctor Strange has to watch this pocket universe and not The Watcher, who watches every universe. Look, you can like this show. It's okay. You're allowed to be entertained. My argument isn't that this can't be your favorite thing. I'm simply arguing from an objective standpoint that it's poorly conceived, written, and the story is bad. I think the evidence is there, and I'm not fighting you on it. I'm just saying I think I have the evidence. So the Watcher returns them all to their respective universes, right? Well, no. I mean, he makes an exception again, since he broke the seal with his oath, right? No exception for Doctor Strange to find Christine, not even to comfort him in all of eternity. T'Challa, Gamora, Carter, Thor arguably had a happy ending, but all of them go back where they came from. It's Romanoff getting the reprieve, though. Being brought to a universe where she died, so the widow is gone, but she helps defeat Loki. All of these people get to see what happens when all of the stones come together. Now, some of them are in a universe where that hasn't happened yet. So they're going to have previous knowledge of this. That story is much more interesting to me. Those stories are more interesting to me than this show. The Watcher monologues then about observing the multiverse. It just feels cheap. The power it might have had feels neutered by the entire show episode catalog. The Watcher has a Spider-Man-like symbol on his chest. Why? I don't think it's ever explained. Maybe that's a comic book meaning that I'm missing. There's also a mid-credit scene with Carter in her original universe getting punched by Batroc when she's brought back to the moment where she left. And then she and Romanoff from her universe discover something different than Captain America did in Winter Soldier. In this timeline, she finds the Hydra Stomper armor with a body inside. And I'm going to be completely and utterly honest here, and I hope you're not offended. Who cares? We already know none of this matters one bit. None of these characters feel like someone we grew attached to or care about. I did care when Steve went back and spent the rest of his life with Peggy. And most people, even though that's kind of a plot hole, are okay with it. We just assume that they have some reason, even though the showrunners and the show writers had conflicting stories about it. We're okay with that. Steve got his happy ending. I imagine this is set up for another season, but do we really care what happens here? Who knows how many timelines have been erased with infinite more left to explore, which means infinite other Steve Rogers iterations. The more I talk about the show to myself, the more I dislike it. I talked with quite a few other people in the past week and didn't rush this podcast out because I wanted to see if I'm in the minority. In my circle of friends, though, I am not. The more casual fans who love going to see blockbuster movies when they come out, those people didn't even watch the show. The huge fans of Marvel all either thought it was okay or terrible. Perhaps for me, then, it's an echo chamber, but all the criticisms were the same. The question I was asked was, does this matter for the next movie? Since I think definitively the answer is no, people just are not going to be that interested. Well, do I have to watch it? No. Well, then why am I going to watch it?
And then there was one.
I realize the way you feel may be much different. So please engage with This Is the Way Phase 4 podcast on Twitter or Facebook. Email me. Let me know what I'm missing from season 1 of Marvel's What If. I'm not sure there needs to be a second season, though it seemed planned. Maybe they'll explore or at least start to learn more, lean more heavily into the new heroes and villains. The last three were much better than the first three, but still had their problems, and I still think my favorite might have been the Doctor Strange-centered episode 4, even with all those problems. For me, it kind of works as a standalone Twilight Zone-ish feature, but the minute you tie it into the rest of the multiverse, it falls apart. Remember, these episodes won't ultimately affect the future storytelling of the MCU, so why do they have to make them work together? They should have just left them all alone as vignettes.
We're just stories to you. We're not real.
Remember, please, our last two podcast episodes where we asked you to join us thanking cufflinks.com for their support, please continue to do so. Let them give you an item from their more than 3,000 finely crafted accessories, which include some really terrific Marvel branded merchandise. You need to have a Twitter account to enter our giveaway. Follow our podcast Twitter at The Way Phase 4. There's a pinned Twitter posting along with some hashtags, and to enter the giveaway, you need to reply with those hashtags. Then email us a link and your name and address. Now, our coupon code is still active and will be for the rest of the holiday season. The Way 15 gets you 15% off everything you find at cufflinks.com site-wide. The Way 15. Our Star Wars themed podcast is also running October and November giveaways, and you can win every item from both podcasts if you enter correctly and are eligible. You must have a U.S. mailing address in the U.S. and follow the rules, but also we have to have enough entries to run the giveaway. We can't just run this giveaway with like 10 or 12 entries. I mean, these are not cheap items, cheaply made, and I'm not just buying them for you. The cufflinks.com is giving them to us for this purpose. They have finely crafted accessories of all kinds. Cufflinks, sure, but also ties, tie bars, lapel pins, shirt studs, socks, and more. So, we may have to extend the entry time and have a winner in November for both sets of items. There is one more planned podcast for October, but there might be more. Black Widow is now available to stream without an additional charge on Disney Plus, as long as you have at least the base subscription, that is. Cufflinks.com is an exclusive, officially licensed provider of cufflinks for several brands, including Marvel.
The multiverse, every single world, every story is my home. And I will protect it to the end.
Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com. Interact on Twitter at thewayphase4 or on facebook.com/thewayphase4. The next live-action show to air on Disney Plus will be Hawkeye, hitting the Disney Plus streaming service on November 24th, still a month away. We're going to wait for Shang-Chi to stream without the additional charge for a review of that movie as well, and that starts streaming without the additional charge on November 12th. The Eternals comes out in theaters in early November, but I'm going to stand on my ethics and morals. I'm not going to watch or even review that show, and that's all I have to disclose about that at this time. I will be heading to the theater absolutely for Spider-Man No Way Home, and that's going to debut December 17th. Our focus will certainly be on the new live-action Disney Plus shows with Hawkeye and then Ms. Marvel, so keep on the lookout for episodes where we might preview or discuss news on those fronts. This has been This Is the Way Phase 4 Podcast's discussion of episodes 7 through 9 of What If. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.